attitude towards Cesar Chavez Avenue and so forth. I must admit I'm partial to civil rights issues locally and tend to focus on that issue myself. But anyway, up in Berkeley, and I consider Berkeley not too far afield. That's not actually local, but it's the same issue up there as it is down here. So the latest thing is apparently the city council of Berkeley is being misinformed by the university that it isn't even being told about the results of the study, which you know, tens of thousands of dollars, as I understand the figure, $100,000 was bruited around, was paid to this group Concur to come up with some understanding of what the community wanted in People's Park. They did, and the university didn't like what they came up with, so they suppressed it. I mean, it's amazing. And I'm going to give you more on this next program, which will be on Monday at 10 o'clock. We have a... I have a whispered comment from my secret informant who doesn't want his name to be known in the next room.
It's a little late.
That my show is going to be unceremoniously booted out of here at noon, so I have to...
The scheduled program is scheduled for 12.
So apparently there is a scheduled... I think fire... Is it the DA or not?
The DA? Recall the DA. I don't know if they're still trying to...
Oh, recall the DA. I recall the DA, and I don't, frankly, don't like what I remember when I think about it.
I ask you a question that's been plaguing me.
Yes, go ahead.
I haven't had a phone to call you.
Feel free. Go ahead.
What is your incessant obsession with using the word polygamy when you're talking about non-monogamy?
That is a criticism I have heard from other individuals, and frankly, I regard this as sort of a conspiracy to discredit and defame a fine, upstanding activist who has worked long and hard in this community to stand up in the face.
Polygamy implies marriage, and marriage to a majority of people that are into non-monogamy is a slave form, an ownership concept, a Christian-conceived ownership concept. Polygamy implies a whole different thing, and you have a phone call. Are you going to answer it or what?
Saved by the phone. Free Radio Santa Cruz here. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson.
Becky, yes. Becky Johnson, you... you've been following a number of cases lately. What you've got a report for us on the situation with the ill-fated Ray McMinn?
Yes, I just spoke with Ray McMinn today, and he's down at the Santa Cruz County Jail.
Now, give us a little background again for those of us who don't know about Ray, although we have mentioned him on the air before.
Ray McMinn has been working with the Homeless Garden Project for approximately the last 5 years, and has been a very valuable liaison person between the homeless community and those of us who have homes, and those people in this community that are trying to do something to help the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray is a formerly homeless man himself who was helped a great deal through the Homeless Garden Project and has indeed gone on to become a member of the board of directors at the Homeless Garden Project.
Uh-huh.
He was arrested earlier this summer. He'd been going through some personal problems. His mother had died, and he was very depressed after that. And he had an incident, a drunken disorderly incident, that landed him in the county jail. And when he arrived and they ran his data through their computers, an old charge from Virginia came up. And when I say old charge, we're talking about 25 years ago.
26, I believe.
Are we up to 26 now?
That's what Ray told me, yeah.
That could well be. Well, it was 1970 was when the crime occurred.
25, yeah.
And that's when he robbed $8 off of somebody he knew. And
it was $8, not $80?
Eight.
Okay, I'll correct that for the street shit sheet, which is coming out today, which does mention Ray's case. By the way, how do you spell Ray's name for those of us who are listening?
Well, it's Ray McMinn. Hmm. That's M-C, mm-hmm, capital M-I-N-N.
Mm-hmm.
And his case number, mm-hmm, is 096929.
That's the California or the Virginia case?
I believe that's the Virginia number.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's who we're concerned with right now, because he's awaiting extradition from Virginia on this 25-year-old charge, mind you, where he stole $8, and no one was hurt in the course of this crime. There were no injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Restitution has been paid long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, Ray was about 22 years old. He'd just come out of the Army. They kind of considered him to be a long-haired hippie type.
Yeah, so he got the hippie treatment.
And that didn't go over too well in Virginia in 1970.
This is a rural county where this happened?
I'm not sure exactly. They decided to really throw the book at him.
So they threw him in jail here because this warrant was uncovered.
Let me tell a little bit about background on this.
Mm-hmm.
He had
we don't have much time.
15-minute trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the jury deliberated for 8 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and they sent him to 40 years in state prison.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is outrageous,
mm-hmm.
considering the lack of severity of the crime relative to the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
He already has served 14 and a half years, and for Virginia now to come and say, because of a parole violation, that they're going to fly him back, put him in Virginia state prison, and make him serve at least another year.
Uh-huh. It sounds pretty outrageous. In fact, we have mentioned this case before, and it's in...
Well, I'm calling specifically to tell people where to write and call and send their... We're gathering together what we can to help Ray. He's been a great asset in our community. We need to rally behind him.
Ray was actually at liberty for about a month and a half after serving some 50-odd days in jail here, thanks to the good offices of Daryl Darling, a local good Samaritan.
That's correct.
And then he was apparently, as you say, taken into custody again yesterday.
He went into court, and Judge Kelsey said in his court that he had showed great strength of character in how he had conducted himself throughout this whole ordeal, and the fact that he voluntarily surrendered himself into custody.
And to reward him for his strength of character, they put him in jail.
And he knew the night before that they were going to that he was going back to Virginia.
Oh, really?
So I mean, he had the option to not
escape.
Show up for that court date, and mm-hmm. he did. So I think that shows the stuff Ray McMinn is made of.
And he's currently held in the Santa Cruz County Jail?
Yes, he is.
And so people can write to him there, or is he likely to be whisked away before the letters reach him?
Well, we don't... See, Virginia has not given us a clear indication. They could come get him today, or they could get him a month from now.
Mm-hmm. Charming.
It's up to their whim, basically.
So how can people help Ray?
Well, we're going to be going across a broad front. Virginia Parole Board is the most likely place to contact.
Mm-hmm.
Their phone number is area code 804-674-3081.
Mm-hmm.
And their fax number is mm-hmm. area code 804-674-3284.
Right.
We're also going to be contacting the State Attorney General's office
mm-hmm.
In Virginia, mm-hmm. A man named James Gilmore.
Mm-hmm. G-I-L-M-O-R-E?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
The phone number there is area code
804-786-2071. Mm-hmm.
And the fax number is 804-371-0151.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we're going to be contacting the governor.
No, the governor. What's his name? Governor Rob?
George Allen.
George Allen. How do you spell the last?
Allen.
Uh-huh.
His phone is area code 804-786-2211.
Mm-hmm.
Fax is
804-371-6351. Mm-hmm. Now, if you didn't get any of these numbers, why don't you give us one number that people can call to get the confirmation on these?
Well, call down. The Homeless Garden Project will be a collecting area where you can leave messages for myself, Becky.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What number is that?
This can't be. be right. I've got 786-2441, but that doesn't sound right.
No,
to
it
me.
Doesn't sound right.
Mm.
Well.
No, that's not the number. Oh, here it is. 426-3609. That's
so,
the homeless garden.
So you
project.
Want to help out Ray either by
calling. Drop things off at 127 Washington Street.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any correspondence for Ray McMinn, you know, just say for Ray McMinn or Attention Becky, and I'll get back to you.
Okay, so if anybody wants to assist Ray, anybody who's known him, anybody who feels that this sentence is outrageous, which I think will probably include almost everybody I know, give a call to the Homeless Garden Project at 426-3609 or drop off a letter at that garden project at 127 Washington Street. I'm not going to repeat all the numbers you gave me because it would take too long.
Actually,
but
I have one more for you.
Well, let's have one more then.
And we believe in calling all of these numbers.
Well, if you have a phone, you have the money to do it, but most of our listeners don't. But sure, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. This is the Secretary of the Commonwealth of the state of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the office that's supposed to handle out-of-state extraditions. And that's area code 804-786-2441.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if people are only going to write or call one place, I would recommend the Virginia Parole Board.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you're interested in doing this, you can give a call to the Homeless Garden Project, Becky, you will call back that person with these numbers,
exactly.
And possibly, you know, some advice on how best to put yourself in this situation, since it sounds like you've been, you know, kind of covering this for some time.
I had not expected this. You know, when we went to court, we really felt that Ray was going to be cleared of all charges, and he was going to be let go, and it very, very much surprised us at the 11th hour that Virginia decided that they did want to extradite him after all. And it's not worth the plane fare to Virginia. There's nothing about Ray being behind bars that's going to protect the public from anything. He's not a threat to society in any way.
Well, as was said in the movie I saw last night, the scarlet letter at the badge
you saw
of
that?
Yes, I did. The badge of shame, the scarlet A that the actress wears for, or that Hester Prynne wears for allegedly committing adultery, is really a badge of shame for the community, and for the penal system, and for the authorities that are imposing this kind of abusive, costly, vicious institutional thing on Ray and on all of us who know Ray. So I want to thank you for calling, Becky. Anything you want to add before I take off?
Well, some of you may know that Ray suffers from emphysema, and he was hospitalized 2 years ago and came very near death. He still has this emphysema, and if he goes to Virginia for another year, it could very well be a death sentence for him. This should not be. We really need to pull together as a community to help Ray out of the situation. And I know there are lots of people listening who know Ray. They know the good work he's done in our community, and they could write a very short letter, very positive, explaining why he's needed in our community.
So anybody listening, do write that letter and then give a call to 426-3609, ask for Becky, or drop off the letter at the Homeless Garden Project at 127 Washington Street. And thank you, Becky, and please keep on the case and keep us updated.
I'll be glad to.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And, yes, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz. We are coming to the end of our show here. Unfortunately, I thought we had another hour, but we don't. It's, I keep forgetting that on Friday, sometimes the schedule changes, and I'm not keeping abreast of the schedule. So what I'd wanted to do was play you more clips from the mall, maybe even a little more of the polygamy issue, certainly some more from Carol Denny's Jolly Roger comedy troupe, plus some readings from Z Magazine, which has a great article in its October issue on Free Radio Berkeley, for any of you who can get down to the library. I believe the library may carry Z Magazine. That's the October issue. Long, interesting article on Free Radio Berkeley. There's also a very interesting article on Mumia Abu-Jamal in the latest issue of Emerge, which is described as Black America's News Magazine, the November issue. I'm going to give you guys a teaser, and you gals too, of the kind of stuff that's being written here. This is an article called Death Watch by Joe Davidson. On death row in a 6-foot by 10-foot cell of a maximum security prison nearly lost in southwest Pennsylvania sits Mumia Abu-Jamal, a 41-year-old journalist and convicted cop killer. Incarcerated since the 1981 shooting of Daniel Faulkner, a Philadelphia police officer, Abu-Jamal has become an international cause célèbre. Thousands of grassroots folks from New York to London and from England to South Africa have staged spirited rallies and passed out literature in his defense. Among his marquee supporters are Maya Angelou, Paul Newman, Johnny Cochran, Danny Glover, Jesse Jackson, Alec Baldwin, Cornel West, Oliver Stone, Ed Asner, Norman Mailer, E.L. Doctorow, Ossie Davis, Naomi Campbell, Gloria Steinem, Henry Louis Gates Jr., Norman Lear, Bell Hooks, Spike Lee, and Salman Rushdie. Nelson Mandela wrote Pennsylvania Governor Thomas Ridge asking that Abu-Jamal's life be spared on humanitarian grounds. The President of France and the Foreign Minister of Germany have made public appeals in his behalf. Even the National Black Police Association has called the celebrated prisoner a victim of the criminal justice system. Abu-Jamal has become the first self-described political prisoner to be launched into cyberspace on a slick $29.95 CD-ROM produced by Voyager Company. His book, Live from Death Row, has gone through 4 printings for a total of 65,000 copies, according to a spokesman for his publishing company, Addison Wesley. And it's hard to visit any major city in the United States without seeing his smiling face and waist-length dreadlocks adorning posters. A full-page New York Times advertisement, which ran on standby for $19,800 but would normally run for $62,000 and was paid for by his supporters, said the trial was full of gross procedural errors and judicial misconduct. There is strong reason to believe, the ad continues, Mumia Abu-Jamal has been sentenced to death because of his political beliefs. Abu-Jamal is a former Black Panther who came under FBI surveillance before he was old enough to drive. Anyway, this is a long and interesting article, and had I more time, I would read it in its entirety, or at least some long selections from it, perhaps in the future. That's a possibility. Again, this is in the November issue of Emerge magazine. Emerge magazine. The article on Free Radio Berkeley in Z magazine is somewhere around here, and I thought I would give you a teaser from that one too, but I'm going to have to find it first, and it, by the time I do, the show will probably be over. The good news is that the Street Shit Sheet, which is the homeless newsletter that I have published 148 issues of, is about to have its 149th issue. You've all been waiting for this since May, and you can line up at the Food Not Bombs meal, or grab me on the street, or give me a call at 423-HUFF if you want a copy of this Street Shit Sheet, which is a letter documenting civil rights abuses and giving you my latest insights and that of others who write for the Street Shit Sheet on the situation for poor and houseless people in Santa Cruz. If you want to be published in the Street Shit Sheet, you have only to submit an article of some sort, an article, a cartoon, a caricature, a photo, a poem. We don't care. The subject matter is civil rights for poor people, and you just drop a line to 322 Maple Street, care of Street Shit Sheet, 322 Maple Street, Santa Cruz, 95060, and we will publish you. And there you are. Of course, I will reserve the right to comment on the article and make a snip here and there, perhaps. If we have to excerpt you, not to censor you, but simply because right now we're kind of a one-pager. But we hope to grow. If you want to volunteer to help on this newsletter, please give me a call at 423-HUFF. Well, now the question arises, is the show going to end? Because the person I thought who was going to come in isn't here. But I will have to investigate this. While I'm investigating it, I'm going to play you a little bit of a dialogue from the streets that might interest you. What have we got here? We have Some end of September stuff from the streets. Interviews with people down on the mall. This is quite a popular feature of the show, so we don't want to leave you with that a little bit. And here they are, a few interviews from down on the mall, September 28th.
Now, well, at 6:35 on September 27th, the happy host has just scored another victim.
I'm so excited.
A man has been forced to move to a bench. Sir, what happened to you a moment ago?
Some household harassed me about sitting on the sidewalk.
Is this individual a man in a green shirt who seems to be walking away into the distance?
Ain't no big deal, dude.
Fair enough. Thank you very much. So you're now seated properly on a park bench.
Oh, yeah, that's where I'm supposed to be, but you know what? It was nice and shady right there. Besides, it was a better view of everybody.
I see.
I like your shirt.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasant shirt. Two women on the wiles of male chauvinism here on the mall.
No, I'm not chauvinist at all.
No. You're not a chauvinist. You're heckling the chauvinist. Is that correct?
No.
You refuse to heckle, is that right?
I refuse to heckle.
He's just been watching
around. I know. I can't even... Will you quit?
She's shoving away my tape recorder, folks. She's turning beet red.
I've been talking to him all day. You put words in people's mouths and then they forget what they're trying to say.
A vicious slander, folks.
The cops, right?
So what you're saying is all cops should die, right? We should just mow them all down, right?
Yeah.
And then everybody just has to agree with you because they get all sidetracked and they're just like, yeah, whatever, man. And then...
Makes a good radio show, though.
So actually, I spoke to the head of the farmer's market.
Oh, really?
And she wasn't aware of, you know, your eviction, but she went into this long rap about... For the benefit of our audience, I want to point out that these two women were told not to show their beads in the farmer's market today, their jewelry. And who told you this? Do you remember the name of the person or what he or she looked like? Or, it was a man?
It was a man with a name tag that had some kind of...
Yeah, I think it was her assistant. Anyway, she said that you have to pay $80, you're not allowed to display merchandise, that sort of thing. Which actually isn't really true because there were people at tables... free speech tables along probably where you were sitting on Lincoln who were displaying things and they weren't paying for that privilege, but...
Yeah.
Hi, would you like to take me to the movies?
Would I like to take you to the movies?
Would you?
Big joke.
Would I take you to the movies?
Would you take me to the movies?
Yeah, I would take you to a movie.
You would, really?
Tonight?
Tonight? Maybe not tonight. How about tomorrow?
I won't be here tomorrow, probably.
Where are you from?
Out of town. Santa Monica.
Santa Monica? What's your name?
Sarah.
I'm Siege.
I'm asking everybody that goes by if they'll take me to the movies. I haven't been in a while.
Oh.
So I want to go.
Oh.
You never know. Somebody might say yeah.
Yeah. I think you're a very cute girl. I want to take you to a movie.
Hi. Do you want to take me to the movies?
No.
Okay. All right. No. That was a good reply, though.
That was a bad one.
That was very witty.
So this is Life on the Mall down here in Santa Cruz.
Hi. Would you like to take me to the movie? Will you?
So we will return to see if, in fact, what's your name?
Sarah.
Sarah is able to get to a movie tonight or not. And possibly how many men end up inviting her, or women inviting her to a movie. Do you want to take her to the movies?
No.
Yeah.
Well, this, in a way, is the biggest movie of them all. I mean, let's admit it.
Yeah.
Is to harass male passers-by in a shameless role reversal process.
Well, I just got my check today. If Mike could get...
October 9th, 1995. We're down in the Santa Cruz Mall. It's about, 8:40 at Cathcart and Pacific. I'm with Free Radio Santa Cruz, interviewing some sitters-by here. How's life treating you, gentlemen?
A-OK.
Any problems with police or hosts here on the mall today?
Nope. I think they're just doing their job.
So you have no complaints?
No complaints.
Are you a local for a while, or passerby, or... Yeah. I see you have a backpack to your left there.
This is actually my buddy's pack.
And how have the hosts been treating you?
They just tell me to get off the site a lot, but that's all right. And, I don't know, I haven't been here long enough for the police to get on my nerves, but they're all right. They're
how long have you been in town?
5 days.
And how are the food services here? Have you availed yourself of the free meals?
There's not many free meals. It's just one down on River Street, but I went down there today, but...
How was that?
It was all right. I mean, it was just beans and, you know,
cool.
Rice, but I think there should be more of, you know, more free meal places.
And what about Feed the People? What's happened to that meal?
I don't know. I wasn't here for that. Feed the People.
Feed the People is a meal that was here on Cathcart and Pacific. Let me pigeonhole Crow here, see what he has to say. He's often got up. My name is Robert, by the way.
You are for the radio station.
I am Bathrobe Spear from Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides, yes.
How's the radio station going?
Thank you very much. I'm referring again with the notorious Crow, a sometime jailbird in a tie-dye. And his tie dies, am I? He's very
tied. Dying. Look at that.
He's tied out. Look at him. And he's been tie-dying as well. So you Feed the People, I understand, has left town. That's what my latest information.
Yeah, I think so. Unless there's a couple holdouts that want to do their own thing, which is fine by us. Feed the People. That's great.
Right,
you know?
But I understand that Sean has absconded with the truck. Is that in fact true?
Taking the truck?
That's what I hear.
No.
Not the Food Not Bombs truck, but the vehicle he was using.
Well, who was it?
It was donated to the Feed the People organization, I understand.
Yeah, Feed the Scammer.
Well, now that's been said, but in fact the meals were coming out daily until I guess about yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, well, you could see it coming a mile away. It's your typical manic person who wants to stand in the limelight, and all of a sudden you look behind your shoulder and he's taking everything from you. I've seen it coming. That's why I went to the meeting in the first place.
Right.
To tell everybody we're dealing with a mess here. And not to let ourselves open too much to this person. And this is my whole problem with the whole Sean situation in the first place. And it's funny to see a lot of people follow that, you know, to go headlong with it, thinking that, you know, it would actually outcome to something good. The hopes are always there. You know, I was hoping that he would do that. But dealing with the person, you know, you can tell that it wasn't heading in the right direction.
Did you have a comment on this?
I was just wondering if the guys with the box out there, that's what you're talking about?
The folk people who were serving food here the last couple nights.
Yeah, with the drinks and the boxes, the food.
And the what?
The bread and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I wasn't here for the last week, but that's what he was doing the week before, so... Yeah, how did that strike you? Were you getting, did it seem a positive thing, negative thing, so-so?
Well, I thought it was pretty good.
I did too. I think it's a positive thing as long as it continues.
It's always a positive thing, but it's not a positive thing as far as Food Not Bombs is concerned, especially when somebody does not adhere to guidelines set up by
his own organization. He did his own organization.
So this is one of the problems that rubbed up against me, you know, because I'm a firm supporter of Food Not Bombs.
How is Food Not Bombs doing these days?
They could use any volunteers out there, really.
425-3345. What's happening on the streets? Any sitting tickets, standing tickets, leaning tickets?
I've been streetless, actually.
Really?
It's a change of pace for me.
Streetless
lately.
In Seattle.
Pausing briefly in the midst of this dialogue from early October with Crow, a local father... an activist, a peace activist from Washington, D.C., actually, where Crow participated in the across from the White House peace vigil, which continues to go on. Regarding the question of Feed the People, I believe Feed the People, largely organized by Sean, is or has been reported to have returned to the mall. And for the last couple of nights, at least one or two of them has been feeding people down there on the mall, a second group in addition to Food Not Bombs. And again, the opinions that you hear on this program are the opinions of the speakers, and they should not in any way be construed to cover the entire truth of the situation. We don't have a long interview from Sean, who is, of course, invited to represent himself. He has become a somewhat controversial figure in some quarters, praised by some, damned by others, and so forth. And that's happened to me, too, at different times. So we'll continue now with some more On the Mall tapes, because the studio is vacant except for me, and I intend to make what use I can of the airtime while I can. And please do call in, 427-3772. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
Lately, I've actually been hanging with some friends in a house, so I've been very fortunate and been able to do some work and tie-dye and do my life, you know, so I haven't been really down here, you know.
Time you were involved in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
In fact, you were involved across from the White House at the so-called Peace Park, or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, the Peace Park Vigil.
Is that still going on?
Yes, it's still going on to this day. We're still pressing for a global nuclear disarmament because you're all sleeping out there.
How many people are actually at that vigil as far as you know?
Well, there's Thomas and Ellen. Thomas has started the vigil in 82. Concepcion's been there since about 83 or 84.
And when's the last time you spoke to these people?
Just probably like maybe 4 weeks ago.
So as of a month ago, they were still there?
Oh, yes, they're still there. They're still being harassed by the police. They work... The government has different branches of enforcement agencies or agencies, such as the National Park Service, the National Park Police, and they come up with regulations and different things, you know, where this is our national land, and this is where we have the right to express our griefs to the government, to gather in national park lands. And they've came up recently with laws that say that you need to get a permit, have insurance, to gather in our national lands. Of course, state lands is a different set of rules, you know, but...
Washington, D.C. is a federal area.
It's a federal area, and where they're at is a federal park.
Right.
And, you know, camping is not allowed, certain size limit to your signs, a certain decibel limit to your drums, and not to mention, you know...
Beard length limits and so forth.
Yes, and there's been abuse by the police powers, of course, as we see it all around the country. And they've been... they're strong for numerous years, and I don't envy where they're at, but I am very grateful they're there.
Well, I'm hoping in some way we can get you on the show, Crow, and kind of a more elaborate analysis, right, maybe even a call. 9:45, show up at Taco Bell.
Taco Hell, man.
If anybody wants to be on the Free Radio Santa Cruz, that's the time to show up. This happened about a week and a half ago where apparently his child was refused bathroom privileges.
Yes, my daughter had to go to the bathroom.
How old is your daughter?
She's just out of diapers, almost three. Well, she turned three October 1st.
Right.
And this is just before her birthday. And we were over here eating food, not bombs, and she had to go to the bathroom right away.
A couple weeks
quickly.
Ago.
And I refused...
Late September.
Yeah, I refused to take her to the Metro, which is our alternative place to take our children to go to the bathroom. And since my... You know, I have a daughter that needs to sit down on the toilet. I will not bring her in there.
In where?
Into the Metro station.
And why not?
Because I have to go into the men's room, and the men's room is disgusting.
Right.
Wouldn't bring my dog in there to take a leak. And so I went over to the food court, and before I've asked them for the key to use the bathroom, and I'm very responsible. I don't go in there and trash the place. And I asked a couple people, and they said, oh, they didn't have the key. It was lost. Then I asked one more person. They said, you got to buy something. And I said, this is for my daughter. This is not for me. You know, and they refused to give me the key. So I asked her, you know, if she wanted to pee on the floor, and she refused, you know, because she likes her privacy, which,
right.
And I understand that, you know. And so on the way out, I noticed there was somebody coming out of the women's bathroom.
Right.
So I walked over to the women's bathroom and grabbed the door and went in there and used the bathroom. And just before I closed the door, I didn't use it. She did.
Right.
I'd never used the facility. Can't get me for that one.
Right.
And I noticed that some type of manager, I don't know what who he is, or I even forget his name, even when he told me, because I just can't remember names very well, was saying I couldn't go in there, so I closed the door real fast and let my daughter go to the bathroom.
Right.
And she had to really take a dump, you know, so this wasn't any messing around. And when I came out, I came up to him and I said I wanted to make a complaint to the management. He said he was the management and so forth and so on. And he asked me if I bought anything. No, and you know, I told him it was basically for my daughter, you know. And he didn't care. I still had to buy something. So is it really capitalism over humanity? Is this what it boils down to? That we don't have a community, but you have to buy something, you know, to have any type of humanity in your heart, to even let a little child go to the bathroom in your sacred little bathroom spot. You know, I can understand teenagers, you know, who come in and mess things up, and I can understand some people that are very irresponsible in their, you know, older years, who come in there and really make a mess out of things. You know, I can see them being selective when it comes to that, you know. But I really feel that just because the way I looked, I'm sure if this was some prima donna who came in there with her pearl necklace and her daughter and her nice clothes that she bought at Cat and Canary, they would have not have done that. I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have done it, but I don't know that for a fact. I'm only assuming. So, you know, I feel it was because I had long hair, and, you know, they judge basically on appearance. You know, this is a big facade in Santa Cruz is appearance. You know, you get a lot more respect if you run around with a tie, and they piss on you if you don't. You know, basically, if you hang out in the wrong spots, hang out with the wrong people that don't look correct, or you have dreads in your hair, or so forth and so on. This is a big problem for Santa Cruzians because, one, there's quite a few upper-class people that feel that they're greater than the common earthworm, and I feel the common earthworm is a lot greater than human beings because they benefit the earth.
Good deal, man.
You know, human beings only benefit themselves, and that's the sad thing about the human race. It just really hasn't really reflected anything good.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, you, after this incident, did you? What was your response to all this?
Well, I basically told them I was going to tell the Sentinel and write newspaper reports about this food court and the boycott the food court. But, you know, I didn't really feel like wasting my breath, so he told me to leave, and I had a couple more words with him. And
Loud words?
Well, I wasn't too loud. I was about as loud as he was. Matter of fact, he was pretty threatening to me.
Right.
So I just wanted to leave out of there with my daughter. And he said he was going to call the cops, and I said, fine, call the cops. I'm out of here anyway. You can come back into your scummy store if you want me to. And so I heard that he did call the police. He could have charged me for
trespassing. But you left when you were asked.
Disturbing the peace. You know, there's numerous things they can come up with. Mm-hmm. Conspiracy to overthrow the government. Who the fuck knows?
So were you, in fact, the recipient of a ticket in the future?
So, no, because I know how the police work around here. Usually if somebody makes a complaint about you and they don't find you, they usually don't write a ticket. So I made myself disappear because I didn't really feel my daughter should be exposed to police violence because they are that way, and or any kind of police harassment for something that is this ridiculous. So instead of making my stand and fighting it in courts, I just walked away from the whole shebang. And I, to this day, will not go into the food court, and I ask people to boycott it because of this situation until the manager can actually apologize and put a note on his window apologizing for what he has done, because it's inhumane to do to a little child and to expose a little child to any of this, you know? And anybody in Santa Cruz who listens to this should understand this is wrong.
The name of your child is?
An Angel.
How do you spell it?
A-N-N-A-N-G-E-L.
Mm-hmm.
And
how old is Angel?
She is 3 years old, October 1st, and that's passed.
Congratulations.
You know, this kind of stuff really disturbs me. The police, and they're acknowledging people when they say hello or give them the peace sign, and they just don't respond whatsoever except walk around like robots. Maybe this is the reason why he got his fucking name, RoboCop. But this is the problem I see, the lack of community we have in Santa Cruz, you know, and people think that, you know, us hippie kids or us dreads down here have no responsibility community, when actually I see Santa Cruz's only foundation for community in the almighty dollar. You know, and this is where it comes down.
Community of wealth, perhaps.
Yeah, community of wealth. Not the community of humanity or brother and sister living next door to you. You know, like we're supposed to think that we have in America. But the community of if you cannot pay, you got to go. This is what kind of community we have in Santa Cruz.
Any other incidents of, shall we say, lamentable merchant... Well, let me ask you this before we go in. Are you interested in mediating this event with these people? I'd get the mediators to work on it. Would you be interested
in
mediation?
Well, actually, if he hasn't pressed any charges, against me, I feel very tired, and it's almost ridiculous. But this type of stuff needs to be talked about in our community. This type of stuff needs to be brought to a head. You know, we should sit down as a community. And the police officers should introduce themselves and tell them where, you know, basically, you don't have to tell the exact location where they live, what part of the community they come from, you know, and who they are. And maybe have the community, you know, if somebody wants to say something to the police board or the citizens review board of the police, you know, say something, you know, in behalf of themselves or other people, we should come together as a community. So there'd be a lot less barriers and walls.
What about this mediation idea? Interested in mediating with the food court?
I don't know. I don't even know if this person's worth it. Because
it might embarrass them.
Yeah, it's already, you know, I mean, I don't know who I'd be hurting, because some of the people in there that work in there I do like.
Yeah, but certainly the question
but
of open use of a bathroom downtown is certainly an important issue. I went into the food court shortly after this incident happened, because I happened to be on the street with this machine. I interviewed a witness on this issue. And I went and talked to one of the women who worked at the food court. She explained that they had closed the bathrooms to everybody not buying food 2 weeks before because of some trashing that had gone on. I myself asked to use the bathroom. I was told the same thing you were, that there was no keys. Finally, I got to a place where the guy was able to secure a key for me, and I went and used the bathroom. But again, I did it because I knew the people. If I had been a stranger coming in from a strange place, I probably would have encountered the same response you and your daughter got.
Yeah, it just blows me away that this would ever happen, to even think that they would refuse a little child the use of a bathroom with adult supervision. It just goes on unbelievable, and the only reason why I can think of it is just because of the way I look.
Which
long hair.
You're pretty good looking, big guy.
I mean, I don't look like I'm a fucking terrorist like McVeigh, okay? But you know, us long-haired hippies don't really have too much of a violent nature in us. And usually people like me with children, adults, fathers, usually don't go into bathrooms
and
trash.
And you did not raise your voice in response to this?
I was about as loud as he was.
Which was?
A little bit upper than I am talking now, maybe a couple more decibels higher.
Sort of like this?
Yeah, I was kind of trying to make my point across, you know.
Okay.
I was basically saying, look at my daughter, this is the person you're trying to affect, you know. And, and of course, when you're trying to talk over rubbish, you know, and... telling me that I had to buy something, you know, because my daughter has to go to the bathroom.
Preposterous. Anything you wish to add to this before I shut you up?
No, that's about it. I just feel that people should know what's going on in their communities. It's really important if we do not want things to happen very violently. You know, I mean, I've had problems where I've seen these children over here, you know, children, teenagers, talking about fighting and ready to do whatever, you know, maybe they have knives, maybe they have guns. So as a police officer drove by these group of teenagers standing on Hippie Corner, I went up to them and I said, you know, there might be a problem with some violence over here. You should keep an eye on these kids. And they said, I'll let them fight. And basically they responded to me because I feel the way I looked. Okay, this is the whole facade like I was talking about earlier before, about basically how you look. You know, and I'm not going to cut my hair just to get a better response. I should have the right to be what I want to be and look the way I want to look. And if I'm black, I want to be black, and if I'm white, I want to be white. If I wanted long hair, I should have long hair without having feeling the pressures of prejudice against me.
And there you have it, the outraged cry of human nature from the downtown mall, or what happens when you deny the dad of a three-year-old an opportunity to take a dump. You heard it here first.
We are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I would like to take a tip of the hat here to Battle and Bob LaMonica, who's cleaning up the station for the first time in about 2 years. It seems like he's sweeping the station out here. You can hear him in the background whistling as he works, so to speak. That last interview was, of course, Crow, also known to our more amorous listeners as Dick, for his call-ins on the non-monogamy issue, but that's a whole other story. We've actually played this interview, not this interview with Crow, but we had Crow in the studio talking about the same issue, but I feel the issue is sufficiently important that it's worth playing the whole of this interview, which I just played, and I hope you weren't too bored, although you, many of you who are regular listeners may be aware that the issue has been raised about Crow's three-year-old... establishment that seemed to indicate to you an insensitivity to basic community needs, a perhaps overly hostile capitalist attitude in the matter of public facilities. Do give me a call at 423-HUFF. I'd be curious to hear about that. Plus, of course, the fact that the downtown really should have 24-hour bathrooms. I mean, that's a minor but essential civilized amenity that is needed in Santa Cruz and has been needed for years. You cannot arrest someone for pissing on the street if there's nowhere to piss. I mean, it's very simple. It doesn't require a lot of brain power to get into that one. But apparently our city council believes in bladder power rather than brain power. It's a pisser, however you look at it. Well, I've actually been able to find my notes. Every radio show, I usually, before I go on the air, I make a lot of notes, stuff I want to pass on, and it actually happens that about two-thirds of the way through the show, I find my notes, and I can actually bring a few things up. And I'm going to do that now, some sort of scattered notes. I want to apologize to Mike, who did he passed on to me 4 computer disks, which contain lots of information on poverty, and I have not made much use of those disks. I hope to in future shows, and I hope to have met Mike to return those disks at the Wednesday Food Not Bombs meal. I did not. My apologies, Mike. Do give me a call at 423-HUFF. We'll try to arrange a rendezvous and exchange those disks, one of which, by the way, is defective. A note from Cole Collerson. Cole Collerson is a man who lives in his vehicle. He got a second camping ticket last Wednesday, actually, I guess it was 2 Wednesdays ago now, across from Harvey West Park. You think you can, that sweeping you here is Uncle Bob in the background, giving this place the once-over. He's got a whole washtub full of debris in the next room. It's very impressive. And for all of you who need house cleaners, Uncle Bob here is the man. He is the man with the plan. Not only has he given Art Danner the fear of his life, he apparently is he's a man of many, many skills. And let's get back to my other reports, but I just want to take my hat off to Bob here. Cole Collerson got a ticket SCPD. Apparently we're having a morning breakfast in that area, morning breakfast meeting. They swept the area. Young, tall, blonde cop gave him a camping ticket. That's a 6.36.010 ticket. Scott Kennedy, for your information, Councilmember Squawkbox Scott Kennedy, you used to be delight in telling me that most of the camping tickets, if not all of them, were a function of our protest vigils and had nothing to do with the innocent, uninvolved homeless people who were just trying to live, that there was no real problem there. It's the same kind of mentality that leads to a weak police review board, such as he proposed and finally got, by claiming that our problems in Santa Cruz are in no way comparable to the large problems in urban areas where police actually lie on the stand, have problems of prejudice and bigotry, and even assault individuals without cause. That, of course, could never happen in Santa Cruz and never has. You can be sure about this by examining the bruises that are that Jason at the May 11th, 1994 rally got when his rib was broken by one of those friendly, nonviolent police officers who were simply trying to defend the right of the police to arrest people for sitting on the sidewalk. This is in a video which Scott Kennedy agreed to review, but to my knowledge has not yet reviewed a year and a half later. As mayor at the time, he had a responsibility to deal with this issue. His way of dealing with it was not dealing with it. And I don't see Catherine Byers, by the way, as doing much better. She's our current mayor. For those of you who don't know, that's Birdseed Byers. Birdseed Byers, I talked to yesterday, asked her to get off her behind and deal with the issue of the police abuse on May 11th. At least, as far as training methods go, she referred me to a subcommittee that has been ignoring the issue for the last 16 months. So much for Birdseed Byers. Now a report from Crossroads Chris on the homeless. Crossroads Chris Brosdas, sometime controversial figure in the homeless rights arena. He was involved for a long time in 1993 in helping out with the California Homeless Network. He's an articulate writer. I'm getting dusted out here, Uncle Bob. I think we may have to get a new janitor if this keeps up. Anyway, Crossroads Chris posted the following article on the internet called Class Cleansing San Francisco, Ethnic Cleansing Bosnia-Herzegovina, October 11th. The San Francisco homeless were dealt a blow today by the withdrawal from the mayoral race of one of their staunchest defenders, Angela Alioto. This apparently was a couple weeks ago. She actually only withdrew a few days ago. Apparently, Chris was ahead of the game in understanding this, or I've got a misdated article. She left the field, as Angela Alioto did, to two liberals, quote-unquote, former black speaker of the California House, Willie Brown, and gay lesbian icon, former supervisor Roberta Achtenberg, who revealed their social fascist credentials and allegiance to former police chief, now mayor, Frank Jordan's Matrix program, a thinly veiled social service fig leaf for a policy to physiologically tire and discourage from habitation homeless anywhere in public places. This, again, is an article by Crossroads' Chris Brosda. Any other treatment of a people not as fragmented, marginalized, and persecutable as the homeless would be met by justifiable self-defense and organization of a people's militia in the face of this war all candidates virtually agree to wage upon them. San Francisco has the highest median price for a house in the nation, $283,000, even with a median family income of $58,800, only slightly less than one out of five houses on the market is affordable to such families. It is the most unaffordable place to live in the nation, and even its liberal politicians have decided they cannot afford to survive politically by allowing the homeless to survive there physically. They are about as welcome as Muslims in Banja Luka, or Serbs in Sanski Most, or Mrakchnik Grad, Bosnia-Herzegovina, as territorial land grabs heat up before the ceasefire takes effect as of 4 p.m. October 11th. And the media disconnect you might expect a business-owned free press to propagate regards its allies, the Croatians, flying the fascist flag of the Pavlovic era, whose ambassador to Zagreb, Peter Galbraith, refused to identify as ethnic cleansing the fleeing of a quarter of a million terrified Serbs from the Krajina. This person continues, Bosnia government soldiers said they had captured troops from neighboring Yugoslavia as well as Serbs from Bosnia, but were unable to present their prisoners to the outside world because they said the captives had been executed. We don't have the time or the facilities to take care of prisoners now, said an officer in the elite Jutak battalion, a unit made up of soldiers who lost their homes in the Serb ethnic cleansing campaign more than 3 years ago, but we have picked up Serbian troops from Belgrade in this advance. They just aren't around anymore to show you. The rejoinder, that's from the New York Times, September 29, 1995, according to Chris Brosda. The rejoinder with no connect. In the last 4 days, as a ceasefire was thought to be drawing near, 10,000 Muslims and Croats were reported to have been driven from their homes around Basanski Novi, Sanski Most, and Prijedor, New York Times, October 11th. Why should the Serb army be expected to protect the homes and property of their Muslim enemies when their Croatian allies are executing on the spot prisoners of war? What is unexpected that Banja Luka, the largest Serb city in Bosnia, choking with 100,000 new refugees from Croatian advances in northwestern Bosnia, not including those that passed through there from the Krajina, throw out their minority and Muslim and Croat populations. Chris has always had a kind word for the Serbs on this issue, but he's pointing out why the disparity in the news treatment of the Serbian atrocities compared to Muslim and Croat atrocities. The Serbs get all the brickbats, and the Muslims and the Croats get the sympathy. Red Cross officials reported up to 30,000 Serbs were fleeing the area of Sanski Most and Mrkonjić Grad. Anyway, this article is worth looking at. If you have a computer, suggest you check out alt.org.foodnotbombs, which is a good news group for all you computer buffs. That's alt.org.food-not-bombs. And Crossroads Chris often posts articles on there, some of them of a more controversial and personal nature, even to the extent of being bickering and paranoiac at times, but he also has some good and interesting things to say about comparing homeless cleansing in San Francisco. He's concerned about the open-air shelter here in Santa Cruz, and I welcome his involvement in the homeless movement. Again, I'll skip to the end of this article. He talks a lot about the ethnic cleansing of Serbs, which is indeed a major disgrace in that war, as well as the Serbian ethnic cleansing of other minorities. In San Francisco, mayoral candidate Achtenberg justifies her policy of disallowing homeless from sleeping in the parks because this lesbian's 10-year-old son was hassled by panhandlers the last time they went to buy a T-shirt in the Hate. In Washington, an anonymous State Department official puts out death threats that their nascent Croat fascist allies execute on old people in the Krajina. All around, it seems to indicate a pretty advanced spiritual depravity and moral bankruptcy. People peeing in public? Oh my God, hunt them down and arrest them for sleeping. I suppose you could, build public toilets and have shelters at least as available as jails, but then that would deprive the morally righteous the pleasure of persecuting the economic refugees. San Francisco does have a set of new self-washing toilets, I'm not sure how many of those have actually been made operational, but certainly some of them are. A kind of a French firm has been hired, and there have been a lot of publicity, brouhaha, and advertisements are essentially the way that the city is going about this. They're in essence renting the advertisement space to pay for the toilets, and they're free tokens for homeless people. It makes a lot more sense than no toilets or Santa Cruz's toilets that close at 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. or before. So that's something we might consider. What other updates have we for you? Well, there's a lot of controversy which has not yet been resolved, at least in my mind, about the origins of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's current piece of property, what the strings are on that property with regard to CCH. I talked to Mayor Byers yesterday. She said that there may well have been some strings on the property when CCH bought it. Again, the property we're talking about is the property on which sits the open-air shelter, the only legal place for homeless people to sleep at night in Santa Cruz, now housing 200 people a night, soon to be housing nobody a night when they close it down, bulldoze it, and turn it into the so-called community house project, which will be a low-income rental project for 50 people, available maybe in April of next year. It's a disgrace. The idea sucks, but it's CCH's standard operating procedure, though this time they may hopefully be amenable to community input and community pressure. They have to go through a permit process to get this community house thing to displace the open-air shelter. How do they originally get the property? They got it from the city with Red Cross funding and funding from other churches. What conditions did the city put upon the use of this property? It's not clear yet to me. I'm getting different stories from former Mayor Don Lane, activist Jane Immler, community house project director Daryl Darling. So I'm in the midst of this. If anybody has any information for me, give me a call at 423-HUFF. I'm going to try to pass it on to you, and I get a clearer story as to what's going on. Carol Denny reports from Berkeley, she's our Berkeley woman on the scene, that the Last night, the University Avenue Strategic Plan Committee met. This is the group of merchants who wants to make sure that no more homeless services go in downtown at the University Avenue, and I think it's the Shattuck area. They're claiming that, according to Carol, these are a small group of people who hate the poor, hate anything resembling social services, and they conclude that there is an over-concentration of social services around the university, and so they want to put a moratorium, get this, a moratorium on affordable or subsidized housing and social services. They want to stop the building of any such housing because they say it should be sent out to other areas of the city that are, quote, richer. Force the rich to have these things in their part of the town. Carol pointed out quite calmly that the statistics they were using, they were calling the library a social service because homeless people use the library. By this logic, if homeless people use bookstores and movies, these should also be considered social services, and so these are unbalancing the stats that are being used. There aren't that many social services downtown. The more the merrier, as far as people go, because the services are inadequate. Carol pointed out the tax base has grown 78% between 1988 and 1992 in this area in downtown Berkeley, that the neighborhood is stable, diverse, rich and poor mix in, the crime rate is very low, and it's being described as a blighted area, possibly because it's just not yuppie enough. I mean, is this a familiar scenario, folks? Is this the scenario, if I can get this cotton out of my mouth, that we want to take over Santa Cruz? We've heard complaints about Crown Books and the chains, and I agree with that. Crown, out of town, that's what I say, in spite of my opposition to Neil Coonerty's bookshop's support of the anti-homeless laws and the Coonerty support of those laws that are still being enforced every day by the downtown hosts, the hospitality Nazis, as Phil Free sings about them. The smiling guys and gals who go around with their little green shirts on, telling you where you can sit and where you can't sit, cautioning those who ask for spare change not to do so, warning hacky sackers, warning people, poor people with dogs. Phil Free has called it a class war, and that might not be so far from the truth. Phil called this morning, by the way, to find out what the disposition of his second disturbing the peace ticket is. He was accused of disturbing the peace, or perhaps it was simply a disturbing the police ticket for playing music of his own creation on the mall, which I heard, by the way, and in my opinion did not disturb the peace in terms of its volume at all. I mean, Phil has a strong voice, but it's his message, I think, that the surrounding store owners don't like. And when you go into the stores, you can barely hear him sing. It's something that I'm afraid that the community is going to have to come to live with, and hopefully will benefit from. Anyway, that his case was put off today. They're still not telling him what the disposition of this case is, which of course is a way of intimidating him, putting him in a limbo status, and it's a contemptible procedure. I think it's time for a little more of the Jolly Roger comedy troupe. I'm a great fan of the Jolly Roger comedy troupe. This again is a Berkeley-based group. Talks about Berkeley and the Bay Area, but we can learn from them, so here we go. At least I hope. Here we go. I seem to be having a problem with this tape just about this point every time I play it.
The corporate crime wave sweeping across America has achieved crisis proportions, swamping the natural landscape with industrial pollution, gutting our natural resources, and bleeding ordinary workers of their health and their hope for a better future. I'm Beatrice Butterbeans, and I'm here today with several experts to explore the psychopathology of the corporate criminal. Professor Noodle, is the corporate crime wave unstoppable?
Well, I think crisis is a good description of the situation, Miss Butterbeans. The pay scale for corporate CEOs has risen by 25%, while pay for the average worker has increased less than 3%. Corporations have increased their profits while laying off hundreds of thousands of workers, gutting their benefit packages, and moving permanent part-time workers whom they hire for less pay and no benefits, and yeah, I'm afraid this trend looks like it's likely to continue.
It's astounding, Professor Noodle. How can these corporate criminals sleep at night, knowing the human tragedy they leave in their wake?
Yes, well, life is cheap for the corporate criminal. Most corporate CEOs are not capable of seeing workers as real people, and they can only grasp the concept of human beings as representatives of cheap labor. These psychopaths actually dominate current decision-making in the business community, and thus, of course, we have the crisis we face today.
Also with us today is Professor Spamberger from the Institute for the Study of the Psychopathology of Corporate Crime. Professor Spamberger, how do these corporate CEOs become psychopaths in the first place?
Well, Beatrice, most of them are reared in complete isolation from ordinary human existence, attending private schools and belonging only to private clubs and so forth. This is done intentionally so that corporate CEOs have no sense of identity or sympathy for ordinary people, which they consider a separate species altogether. In this way, they're trained to make corporate decisions which devastate the environmental and human landscape without feeling a thing.
Without feeling a thing? Without remorse? Without any sense of community?
Without any sense whatsoever of causing human suffering, yes. The corporate criminal is reared in such an isolated, perverted circumstances that they actually have no sense of right and wrong.
But why wouldn't a corporate board of directors do something about this? Surely they could fire a CEO who made decisions to squeeze the labor force for profit's sake alone.
Ah, but the common species of corporate boards of directors choose their CEOs precisely for these pathological qualities and are often reared in those same private schools and clubs. Profit worship is common, and strange profit-worshipping rituals take place daily. Do you agree, Professor Noodle?
I'm afraid I have to agree, Professor. The prophet worship is considered spiritually desirable attribute in this pathological corporate world, and prophet-worshipping corporate retreats, they take place constantly, reinforcing the values.
It's a very frightening situation. What can our community do to stop these corporate criminals? Can our political leaders do something?
Yeah, right.
I see.
Yeah, see, I'm sorry, Miss Butterbeans. It's just that this is generally the ill-gotten gains from the corporate crimes which finances the winning political campaigns, so, you know, of course it has
yes,
to.
Yes, corporate profits are quite commonly used to elect politicians and to pass laws which reduce corporate responsibility and increase profits. So, of course, you see...
It's a symbiotic pathological relationship.
Well, professors, you paint a very serious picture of the current devastating corporate crime wave. Pathologically criminal corporate profiteers dominating both boardrooms and political backrooms without a trace of concern for their fellow human beings.
But keep in mind, Beatrice, that any such concern would be both a business and a personal liability for a corporate CEO in the current seamy underworld of corporate crime.
Thank you so much, both of you, for coming.
Thank you for having us on the show.
A pleasure to be here.
We've been speaking with Professor Noodle and Professor Spamberger on the psychopathology of the corporate criminal and the current corporate crime wave. This is Beatrice Butterbeans, signing off for NPR, National Pirate Radio.
And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, The Final Minutes. And in order to give you a bit of our Santa Cruz scene here, as well as the Berkeley scene, you may remember we were discussing polygamy, that is to say, non-monogamy, in Phil Free's words, and Phil is quite right. We're talking non-monogamy here. Polygamy is more describes a Mormon setup, for instance, where one man has many wives. It also is an anthropological term, which is a sort of a generic term for describing a situation where either a man has many marriage is married to many women or a woman is married to many men, although when a woman is married to many men, that's often called polyandry. But let's not get technical. Let's get down to what's happening on the streets. We would continue with our interviews on the streets on the issue of non-monogamy. So when you hear the word polygamy, think non-monogamy or free love. That's the subject we're discussing. And you're soon going to be rolling into Bob LaMonica's show, and I invite you to wait. Don't leave this just because I'm leaving when 1 o'clock rolls around, because Bob will have an hour of stimulating stuff for you.
So it's October, hey Mike?
11th, 12th?
12th, 1995. It's about 2:50 in the afternoon. We're at a noisy spot at Pacific and Maple Street, across from the bus and depot, and I'm with
Paul Martens
and
Anthony Delatorre.
And what's it, 420?
Well, maybe a little bit shy.
Yeah, a little bit shy, about an hour shy, yeah. But we're talking about sexual life among young people in Santa Cruz. By young, we mean under 25. That's what I mean by young. You guys have been saying there's a lot of unsafe sex happening. What about in terms of productive relationships between men and women? Do you find that a lot of that is happening?
Not at this age.
No? Not at this age. It's pretty much
destructive. I think it's very destructive. I think people that meet and frequent each other, they're not really the ideal relationship that everyone searches for. There's always problems. That's why people go on meeting other people.
Is there a lot of teenage pregnancy among people you know?
I do know people that have had babies when I was very young, like 17, that were friends of mine, women, actually. So yeah, I think teenage pregnancy is like either at a peak or just starting to roll.
And what's the attitude of you and others toward women who are pregnant? Any different than a woman with babies? Is there much support for those women?
There's so much support. There's a lot of support. Where I come from, Boulder Creek, it's like there's a lot of support. We all watch out for each other, because the case in a lot of the instances I know is that the father will just bail out, because, you know, the father being a 20-year-old, 19-year-old, whatever, it's just not ready for that. And right now I know about like 7 either pregnant girls or girls that have babies, and not one of them is together with the father right now. Out of all the 7 I know, not one is with the father.
And a lot of those women that are on their own and they're not being totally honest with themselves, they treat the babies and their health not quite, you know what I mean, something that would be ideal for the child itself. I don't believe in abortion. I don't agree with abortionists. I don't find any of their opinions appealing. I think they're in a sense being incorrect for political reasons and propaganda. As a matter of fact, I have seen a lot of publicity on the whole subject, and I don't see somebody walking up with a camera. You just had a baby. How do you feel? I'm going to Disneyland. I never see that. I always see people. I'm gonna kill my baby, or I'm going to abort at the 3rd month, you know, people walking out with not so much of a you know, glow about oneself, you know, after they walk out from you know, extinguishing what I believe as a life.
What about the attitude towards gay people, in your opinion? You say you have gay friends, you guys, or
I have more lesbian friends than gay friends, because around in Santa Cruz, gay is not as popular as lesbians, I guess. But I'm all for it. I mean, if that's what your preference is, go for it. Just don't try to include me. Don't ask me into your ways.
Do your friends respect you in that respect?
Yes.
And yours?
Do friends of mine respect me for holding my opinions about gays?
Do friends of yours who are gay or lesbian respect you in terms of your own sexual preference?
If they have self-respect, they respect anything that is outward about another person. I think gays, even though they're a large part of this community, I don't know about popularity, they're still a factor in the whole situation. I have no, you know, thought on gay sex, you know. It doesn't appeal to me. Gay sex is just like a subject that is thrown around, you know, as far as I know, you know what I mean? It's not something I experience personally. So I think gay sex, like you know, for anyone that is active in sexual activities, it's more like, yeah, be careful, but do what you like, you know?
What about bisexuality? Any friends of yours bisexual?
Yeah. I have about 4 friends that are bisexual. They like it both ways. They like to swing from both sides of the plate. And I don't know, with myself, I don't particularly agree, because if you can get the opposite sex, there's no real point in getting your own sex too. But you know, everybody's brains work differently. Everybody, we just need to all get on the same boat and start paddling, you know? We all need to work together.
Thank you, Bob. All right. Polygamy.
I believe in monogamy. I believe it'll work, but me, myself, I'm a pagan.
You're a pagan. And you, sir?
I believe in polygamy, but unless you find the right girl, and then it's cool to settle down with her, you know, as long as you're both willing to make a commitment.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sean. It's on monogamy versus polygamy.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Monogamy means like you're with one person.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
And polygamy would mean a number of people committed to them equally.
No, monogamy. Monogamy all the way. I've seen people with like that open relationship. It just doesn't work.
Okay. And so you never tried that yourself?
I've tried it. It does not work. I can speak for myself. It doesn't work. Monogamy all the way.
Okay. Thank you very much. You're polygamy, sir. What's your opinion?
I don't even know what it is.
That's one relationship with one person or a number of relationships with a number of people?
One person.
All right. Thank you very much. Polygamy. Your view?
Whatever it takes to survive.
And for yourself personally, have you found any change in...
What do you mean by polygamy?
The ability to have multiple relationships with people rather than the choice of simply one relationship with one person.
Safety first, Mom always said. If you have relationships with a number of people, I would suggest you understand the commitment and the kind of spiritual marriage and the responsibility of your actions. Take a group view. Take a family view. Monogamy in large groups, I think, is necessary today. If the large group has already been formed, considering the AIDS epidemic.
When there was a different situation, let's say in the 70s, would you think this would still have been the case? Was that still your view?
I think that many of the exoduses that occurred from the Haight-Ashbury period, flower power, the Vietnam era children, many of the exoduses went out to form communal relationships and larger family bonding. I think it's been going on in the underground for any number of years, quietly, secretly, sacredly shielded. I think it's not evident. I think many things went deeply underground during the 80s. And I think that in the course and action of these inspirations, it was in preparation for something like the AIDS epidemic. In the ancient times, the Native American people and various Native cultures and throughout the world have always had larger family units than two. In the future, and for the sake of the ecology of the Mother Earth, it's going to be necessary to understand that pair bonding and the relationship of just two people sucking up all the resources of the earth ain't going to work. However deep that goes is a matter of what's behind the sacred door and nobody else's business.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's about the end of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. These are interviews on non-monogamy, a subject initially raised in a very good show by Candlelight Kim Argula a couple weeks back. We're going to go out now and seg you soon into Bob LaMonica's show. You're going to hear a little bit, one more segment from the Jolly Roger comedy troupe. It will take up the next 3 minutes, and then Bob is going to be with you for the next hour. Is it the next hour, Bob, or is it longer? Next hour. So remember, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides. We are happening every Monday and Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning. We invite your participation by phone at 427-3772. We invite your participation in person. Come to Taco Bell at Pacific and Laurel Streets at 9:45 in the morning, and you will probably be on the air. We've never turned anyone away yet. So let's hear some more from Berkeley's Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, by a tape, by the way, which with others will be left in the studio for others to play. Take that, feel free. And do tune in next time, and stay with us, and stay with the station for Bob LaMonica's Hour. Yes, buddy.
Seen a purpose pitch in your life, that was it right there. Guy hits two home runs last night.
I was home one Saturday morning just sewing on some buttons and watching a ball game when there was a knock at the door. I wasn't expecting anybody, but I opened the door anyway just in case I'd won the Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes, and there was a salesperson on my porch selling an unusual product. Yes, can I help you?
It's your lucky day.
It's my lucky day?
Yes, you're in the right place at the right time to take advantage of this special offer for a short time only. Available only to special customers for a limited period of time for an exclusive offer.
Hold it! Hold it! Slow down there. Are you selling something? Is that it?
You got it. A big bingo for you and your lucky family, Mr. What did you say your name was?
Well, I guess I actually didn't say.
Well, that's all right, too, because we're both in the right place at the right time to take advantage of this wonderful offer.
Well, since I live here anyway, that wasn't very difficult.
Oh, but this is a special offer you don't want to miss.
So, what are you selling there?
Well, for a mere $100,000, you can have not one, but two meals with President Clinton.
Well, that's rather a lot for only two meals.
But it comes with these little stickers. See, aren't they cute? They say, I had dinner with Bill.
Well, they're cute and all that, but that's still a little steep.
Well, not to worry. We're also offering another two meals with the Vice President and two policy retreats.
Well, that's very nice of you to offer, but I really don't think I could swing it.
Well, not to worry. We also have a $1,000 package that gets you lunch with Second Lady Tipper Gore.
I'm sorry, I just don't think...
We got some cool stickers for that one, too. See, I had lunch with Tipper.
Look, my friend, I hate to waste your time this way. I just don't really have an interest in buying phony access to the President.
Well, that's okay. Neither does anybody else, I guess.
Kind of a tough sell, is it?
You got it. Nobody wants to be caught dead with one of these buttons on. Even the one that says, I screwed socks, isn't selling.
You mean they're selling sexual favors with the White House cat?
Sure, they're desperate. They're selling sexual favors with everybody, including Chelsea. But the cat's the only one getting lucky. They're selling one-night stands in the Lincoln bedroom. For $50,000, you can smash Nancy Reagan's china. Would that be of interest to you and your family?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid not. Tell me, isn't this the same President Clinton who criticized influence peddling when he was a candidate?
Yeah, isn't that something? Well, people ask me about that, you know, but, well, I gotta make a living.
I'm sorry, I can't help you out, my friend, but at least you're doing better than the Democratic Party.
That's for sure. Well, I'd better move on.
It's been very nice to meet you. Good luck selling influence with the President.
Thanks a lot. So long.
And off he went into the neighborhood with his $100,000 policy retreats and his little buttons. I felt a little sorry for him. Door-to-door sales is a tough job anyway, and it's tougher when you have a product nobody wants. I went back to sewing on buttons and watching the game, and I realized that with the election coming up, my friend the salesperson would have a new product line in no time at all.
I want to thank everyone out there for their support.